strap in, open your mind, because this is going to be a hot one.
The following program is brought to you with limited commercial interruption.
Today's broadcast is being simulcast in broken English.
Here we go in 3, 2...
Time to wake up!
Hey, what are you doing here? About to go on the air!
Uh-oh.
Get out of bed. Resistance is futile.
Back to reality.
I love that show.
It's very hip to be on the show.
We ain't one at a time in here.
They broadcast me out on the radio.
We're mass communicating.
Best show since no other show.
I absolutely love you. You're thoroughly entertaining.
Get ready to taste some sweet ear candy.
Okay, here we go.
It's showtime.
Gentlemen. This is The Cue.
Let's get down to business. Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Cue. Of course, my name is Mark Bland, and you are listening to the best current events, pop culture show with a political twist east and west of that great Mississippi River, hailing from the great city of St. Louis, Missouri. As always, I am Mark Bland, and this is The Cue. I can only say this one time, ladies and gentlemen, this is not NPR today. That's all I'm going to tell you. We are not going to be kind. We are not going to be happy. We are not going to be sullied in this situation. I am joined today by, as always, my favorite producer in the entire world, Producer Bobby. What up, buddy?
What's going on, man? Things are going great for me over here.
All right, fair enough. Lucy Mendez, the first lady of The Cue, has decided to sit in once again with us. How are you, Lucy?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
I like the title for it.
Yeah, she's the
first lady. I love it.
That's what we do on purpose. STL, where The Cue hails from, ladies and gentlemen, is under a serious haze of anger over the death of a young man by the name of Michael Brown. We're going to discuss this in detail. To help us, we have former City of St. Louis Police Chief Dan Isom here to break down and discuss it with us. And we will also be joined by Tyler Crandall and discuss his North County song in light of the recent events. We appreciate both you gentlemen. Thank you so much for being here, Dan.
Thanks for having me tonight.
And thank you so much, Tyler.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it. All right, so let's get into the dirty of this. Bobby, let me read this real first, just real quickly. The outraged community of, first off, before we go any further, let me preface this with this. I went to McClure North High School. Our friend Tyler, who's joining us tonight, Hazewood Central.
Central, Hawks.
McClure Commons.
Stop that. McClure Commons. Me and Bobby specifically, Hazelwood's their own school district. Me and Bobby actually went to the Ferguson-Florissant School District.
Right.
Which is basically means that we lived next door to each other. We all hung out around the same areas, rode up and down the same streets. Forestwood Park. Right?
Forestwood Park.
There it is, in the house.
Yeah,
we've done absolutely all that. And Dan, real quickly, what part are you from St. Louis originally?
I'm from St. Louis originally.
What part?
I lived in North St. Louis, so Penrose neighborhood.
Penrose over there by Farland and all that?
Yes.
All right, mm-hmm. Fair enough. Got it. And then Lucy. Lucy, you're not originally from here. You're Kansas?
I'm from Kansas.
What part of Kansas?
Dodge City, Kansas.
Dodge City. So, like,
from Kansas?
If there's any place in American history that is really well known for having a lot of gunfire at each other, Dodge City.
Dodge City.
It got so crazy at the Dodge City Hall last night, man. You got to calm it down.
All right. So here's the situation, ladies and gentlemen. The outraged community of Ferguson, Missouri demands answers after a police officer's fatal shooting of a teenager this past Saturday. Witnesses told KMOV the unarmed 18-year-old Michael Brown had his hands in the air when he was shot several times by a Ferguson police officer. A spokesperson with the St. Louis County Police Department, which is currently investigating the shooting, confirmed to the AP that Ferguson police officer shot Brown but did not give a reason for or any details surrounding the shooting. The officer has been placed on administrative leave. Dorian Johnson, a friend of Brown's, told KMOV that he was with him at the time of the incident. He shot again once, and my friend felt that shot. He turned around and put his hands in there. He started to get down, and the officer still approached with his weapon drawn and fired several more shots. After the shooting, hundreds of Ferguson residents reportedly took to the streets to protest. This comes from CNN. At a peak of the spontaneous street protest, up to 1,000 people turned up, somewhat very angry at Police Chief Thomas Jackson, we had what probably bordered on riot conditions, he said. Officers heard gunfire at the protest, and it took them hours to secure the scene for county homicide detectives to get evidence safely before removing Brown's body, according to Jackson. The St. Louis County NAACP is launching their own private investigation into the shooting, according to CNN. Local chapter president Esther Haywood released a statement saying, "We plan to do everything within our power to ensure that the Ferguson Police Department, as well as the St. Louis County Police Department, releases all details pertinent to the shooting. We strongly encourage residents to stay away from the crime scene so that no additional citizens are injured." All right, boys and girls, let's get into this. I've got some issues, and I'm really happy that former City of St. Louis Police Chief Dan Isom is here, because aside from Dan being the police chief and having stood at that podium many, many times in his glorious career to handle, situations of the same exact magnitude, Dan is also a black gentleman. So he has grown up as a black gentleman in the United States of America, in the city of St. Louis specifically. He has dealt with police when he was younger, white and black. He has seen it on both sides of the game, and he understands what's running through not only the police officers' minds, but as well as the black community's mind. And that's why I'm extremely happy to have you here today, sir.
Well, thanks for having me.
And first off, let's start with you, Dan. Where do you stand on this? Where's your mind at when this all came down? What were you thinking originally? How did you feel about this situation with Michael Brown?
Right. So there's two things that we absolutely know about this incident. We know that Michael Brown was walking down the street, apparently in the middle of the street.
Yep.
With his friends. And as far as I know, walking down the middle of the street is not a crime. And if it is, it's a very, very minor crime.
Right.
And then there was an encounter with a police officer. Now, we don't know really all the details of what happened in between this very minor stop and the death of a young man.
Right.
But it's very perplexing.
Right.
We want to know why. We want to know how such a minor incident resulted in the death of a seemingly quality young man. And so all of us have to be very distressed at the fact that in a case like this, a young man is dead.
Yes, which is the saddest part of the entire situation, regardless of whether you're for the rioters, against the rioters, for the family, against the family, with the police, whatever it is. At the end of it, there is a young, dead 18-year-old man who his life is cut short.
Right, and something terribly went wrong.
Yes.
I mean, we don't expect that when an officer stops someone for walking in the street, that whole situation will dissolve into a violent situation. And so I think everybody is trying to figure out why did this happen?
And that's where the biggest argument of this entire situation comes in, is the fact that there's supposedly two sides to the story. Originally, in most cases, it would be Michael Brown's versus the police officers, but Michael's not here to defend himself. So now there's Dorian Johnson, the eyewitness and friend that was walking with him. They're his version of the story, as well as a few eyewitnesses that happened to turn around and see it at the time that it was happening. And then there's the police officer, which we have not heard from this police officer at all. We have not heard his name. We don't know the color, make, race, any of that. All we know is that it was a Ferguson police officer that did the shooting. Now, Bobby,
I get to this.
Yes.
Apparently, there was a video of the entire incident that someone uploaded to Facebook. But Facebook didn't know what this video was. They just knew it was someone that had been killed. So they instantly deleted the video. But police are in the process and have still been looking for the person that uploaded this video, because the video shows Mike walking down the street, the officer driving behind him, encountering
Mike.
Such
an odd thing, though. Like, who? Like, nothing personal, but, like, who is, like, just chilling out before the situation pops off, right?
Yeah.
Who's just chilling out, just going, yep, you know, just another day here. Just love filming all my neighbors. Just taking a look at every single one of them and making sure there's some weird people in this world. But evidently, as you stated,
right,
this is
someone did. Now, this is Dorian Johnson. This is his side of the story.
Now,
there's only two people that know. Ultimately, to me, there's only two people that know what happened: Dorian and the officer. But everyone's trying to put in, well, I saw what happened. I was out there when it happened. But these other people, their stories are kind of changing.
We're going to talk about that, because I have a list of things that I have sitting here in front of me that I want to discuss point-wise, because I think everything that I've thought about And you also have to understand, I'm kind of like everybody else in the news media in St. Louis is doing the news media thing, right, Dan?
Right.
Like, you've been on a few of the shows, so like, they're doing the news media thing. I'm giving opinions. Like, I'm not wasting anybody's time. I'm getting right down to the bottom of this bitch. That's all there is to it. Like, I don't have time. I have a fan base that is seriously eager to hear what's going on and why I want what I'm going to say. So let's get into this right here. This is Dorian Johnson, friend of Michael Brown.
Dorian talking to CNN.
Me and my friend, we was walking down the street, on the middle of the street, and we wasn't causing any harm to nobody. We had no weapons on us at all. We just walking, having a conversation. No cars were blowing at us or honking at us like we was holding up traffic or anything like that. A police officer squad car pulled up, and when he pulled up, these were his exact words. He said, "Get the F on the sidewalk." And we told the officer we was not but a minute away from our destination, and we was sure to be out the street. We was having a conversation, and he went about his way for about 1 or 2 seconds as we continued to walk. And then he reversed his truck, his car, and in a manner to where it almost hit us, and it blocked both lanes off the way he turned his car. So he pulled up on the side of us. He tried to thrust his door open, but we were so close to it that it ricocheted off us, and it bounced back to him. And I guess that, you know, got him a little upset. And at that time, he reached out the window. He didn't get out the car. He just reached his arm out the window and grabbed my friend around his neck and was trying to, as he was trying to choke my friend. And he was trying to get away, and the officer then reached out and grabbed his arm to pull him into the car. So now it's like the officer's pulling him inside the car, and he's trying to pull away. And at no time, the officer said that he was going to do anything until he pulled out his weapon. His weapon was drawn, and he said, "I'll shoot you," or "I'm going to shoot." And in the same moment, the first shot went off. And we looked at him. He was shot, and it was blood coming from him. And we took off running. And as we took off running, I ducked and hid for my life because I was feared for my life. And I hid by the first car that I saw. My friend, he kept running. And he told me to keep running because he feared for me, too. So as he was running, the officer was trying to get out of the car. And once he got out the car, he pursued my friend, but his weapon was drawn. Now, he didn't see any weapon drawn at him or anything like that. I was going for no weapon. His weapon was already drawn when he got out the car. He shot again, and once my friend felt that shot, he turned around and he put his hands in the air, and he started to get down, but the officer still approached with his weapon drawn, and he fired several more shots, and my friend died.
And now the city of Ferguson is burning, ladies and gentlemen, on that account literally. Right there. Literally, tear gas canisters have been flying for 3 nights. They have had multiple people gotten shot since Michael Brown. This has become an out-of-control situation, and it's not getting any better. Hell, it's become so important, and I hate to say this, Young Jeezy the Rapper decided that before his concert, he was going to stop by the Quick Trip, and he was going to pose in front of the empty Quick Trip lot where they burned down the building the day before.
He said he didn't believe it.
Yeah, he didn't believe it. He didn't believe it got that serious.
Young Jeezy and Wiz Khalifa.
Because, you know, in St. Louis, the place that's always vying for the top three positions of deadliest city, Atlanta's always beating them out, right? It's always Atlanta that we're worried about. It's Atlanta. Atlanta's the spot, right, guys? That's where we're at. Okay, now, I've got an issue. I've got a couple issues. I really do believe Dorian's story. I don't have a problem with Dorian's story because as a person who does this for a living, a person who sits behind a microphone, I interview people all the time. My job is to sit there and listen to their voice, listen to their tremor, listen to their watch. It's in live in the studio, I get to see their tone, their inflection, their natural reaction and stuff like that. So I've been doing this for 20 years. When I listen to this man, I've had very, very worried people on my show before. I've had people who are scared. I've had people that were nervous or angry. And you can tell all of their little different things. And on top of it, I have a master's in speech. So now when I listen to Dorian speak, he doesn't stammer. He does typical American. There's nervous tics that are typical to every American that they do. He does those things normal. There's nothing that's heightened in the level. There's nothing that he says. He doesn't double speak. And he's told the exact same story almost to the T every single time that he's been on the air. Now, here's where my problem with Dorian's story is. At no point in Dorian's multiple interviews does he say the color of the officer? Now, you might not think that that's important. You'd be like, well, it's kind of racist. This, no, no, no. Think about this, ladies and gentlemen. This is an 18-year-old young man who's grown up in the United States of America in 2014. Now, I don't know how old Dorian is. I'm not
sure. Dorian is 20 years of age.
He's 20 years old. So he's around the same age. They grow up in black culture. They've dealt with police officers. This is, I'm not saying he would do this, but let's be honest. Dorian probably around his friends, if you're just like the rest of us, a little loose with their language. They see a cop come flying by on a Friday night, not this day, but on a Friday night, and right. He's off in the distance. They'd be like, effing pig, something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, all right. The low-hanging fruit is what? That the officer is what color? I mean, that is like the epitome. That is all that Rodney King's case was based on, the five white officers beating the black man down.
Now, one thing I have found out that I just found out, and I haven't gotten a chance to tell you, Mark.
Okay.
Most of
you going to blow my mind?
Most of Ferguson Police Department is white.
Right, that's okay.
They only have three African-American officers in an area that is predominantly African-American. They have two right. females and one male officer
now,
that's African-American.
Don't know at this point of the show.
Absolutely what, correct.
We don't know. We don't know. No. Can we assume there's a good ratio chance that the officer is white?
Yes. Correct.
Well, I think in an interview today, he did say that the officer was white. So I think that was a CNN interview that he had done earlier today or late last night.
Well, that's okay. Good that we finally got that piece of the puzzle out there. Now, with that being stated, that is low-hanging fruit, and I feel that that's... Now, the other thing that I have a problem with on Dorian's story is the fact that the officer backs up, and his first initial response is to grab him by the back of the neck. That seems like an awkward spot to grab someone from a seated position, even in an SUV.
Well, I think he was just... I think according to what I've heard Dorian say is he just grabbed for him. And apparently
he said grabbed for the back of the neck. Then
no,
he pulled
he just
away.
Grabbed he grabbed for
his,
him.
No, and that and what we just played, he says he grabs him by the back of the neck, and then when Mike pulls away, he grabs the arm to pull him back into the car. So that's why I was confused as to the whole. That's an awkward position because the neck is a very strong muscular area.
Right, right.
A person's hand, regardless of how big the officer is not going to be able to handle a guy the size. I mean, Dorian's my size. Like,
but there's
he's about 50 pounds heavier and the same height.
There's
I mean, this
two
is a big dude.
Right. There's two parts of the human body that you can control their movement no matter what: the neck and the hips. If you certain points, if you push a certain way, you can control all movement in the body. Like if you push a certain way on an
I'm
on
sure
the,
that was running through the officer's mind as that situation went down. He's no, like, oh my God, I want to make sure that I get my science right on this
no,
because
but
I'm going to grab this guy by the back of the neck.
No,
maybe he's a wrestling fan.
If he's if he's a veteran of the force of 6 years like they said he was, I mean, he's probably thinking, okay, I'm trying to take control of this situation, and he's trying to think, okay, if I grab here.
Bobby, how long did it take you to get through high school? 4 years? I bet you when you graduated high school, you were like, I'm an adult now. Yeah. And then 2 more years went by, and you were like, I wasn't an adult.
Absolutely.
So 6 years, although 6 years is a bit of time. I'm not going to sit there and say it's like a ton of time. And here's the other thing we have to realize, ladies and gentlemen. We're dealing with an area in St. Louis, and Dan, please preface at any time whatever you want to say.
Okay.
You can jump in any time and stop me if you feel I'm going overboard. We're dealing with an area of St. Louis, that Lucas and Hunt corridor that goes down
right.
basically from basically Castle Point Pine Lawn in 367. Is it 367 over there?
Yeah.
By the old Grandpa Pigeons and all that yeah. back in the day. Over there,
yeah.
Riverview.
Right.
367. 367 mm-hmm. all the way up to Lucas and Hunt where it hits 70. That whole corridor, that's a rough area. It's been rough for many, many years. It's not, and I used to. Off Imperial, Sheffingdale was where they had the shooting of the young lady the other night.
Yeah.
I used to go to preschool on Imperial, which is two streets over.
Who right. luckily we found out she did survive.
Which is good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is an area that has had some problems in the past, and it certainly is an area with crime. I could say as the chief of police in the city of St. Louis, we had areas that were much worse than that.
Oh, I'm sure you
absolutely.
Did.
Absolutely. So
the horseshoe.
But as you stated, it is a difficult area to police.
Right. It's a very difficult. It's not so much that it's very hard to police. It's just that the makeup of the individuals who live through that corridor are, for the most part, African-American, okay? Because it's an older part of St. Louis. It's the area that all the white people lived in during white flight back in the 1950s. They all moved into Jennings and that whole corridor right there. And then when the mid-90s popped up, they all moved out to St. Charles and O'Fallon and down south and all that. And they kind of filled back in into Kinlock and Berkeley and that whole area, the rest of that.
Right, right.
And that's where we're at with that.
Okay, now I do have a question for... Sorry, for Dan.
What are you doing?
So I'm getting excited. Okay, so one thing that I have a problem with, because I do have a lot of friends that are law enforcement, I'm tired of hearing the thing about that the police are corrupt. Okay, they're saying that, you know, the reason this happened is he had an agenda and all this other stuff, which we don't know yet. We right. don't know what happened.
If he had one, it was a personal agenda. It correct. Definitely wasn't a police officer right. agenda. Correct.
So what do you have to say to those people that sit there and say, you know, we can't trust the police because they're all corrupt. They're all in somebody's back pocket.
Fair enough.
Yeah, well, I do think that, you know, there are myths about police that really are not true. Now, certainly we have police officers out there who are not doing the right thing, but I think like
in that's any, every city, though.
In any profession, any
yeah,
city.
Yeah, any profession, too, yeah.
You have a group of people who are not doing things appropriately. I think the problem with police is that people just have a higher expectation that every officer is going to do the right thing. Now, is that unrealistic? Yeah, it is, but...
It's a superhero mentality of sort. Like, you're supposed to be my saving grace right. in every situation.
And so you're not supposed to do that. And then the other thing is that one bad cop or two bad cops can really, really... make a bad impression on the entire profession.
Of course.
Because right, you have right. so many contacts in a year's time or over the course of your profession, and it's not just that one bad contact. It's all of your friends. It's all of your relatives that you tell the story to. And
yeah.
It multiplies, it triples, it doubles, and then it becomes this living legacy that officers in a particular area are officers are all corrupt. And so... it is overblown in many situations, but if you've got 5% of your force, and I'm not saying that Ferguson does, but if it did, that's five officers who are having encounters on a regular basis
right.
with people in the community, and those two or three or five people could have a significant impact on your image.
Right. Now, it's a public relations thing, and that goes into kind of what I was going to bring up. The ability to properly witness something, you're like, we're getting ready to hit the break here in just a few seconds, but I want to, before we go to the break, I want to say this. You know, in most of these cases, you're out. The area that we're talking about, it's probably very common for police presence to kind of roll through. Not something that, like, blows their mind by any means, because, like I said, the apartment complex, a large black community, primarily in that area, and so they're used to this coming through. And so, like, they see a cop roll up on two guys talking in the street or whatever, walking down the street. They probably aren't even paying all that much attention. I'm going to finish this point when I come back. We're going to take a quick break here on The Q. Make sure you check out The Q now.
Look, if you had one shot or one opportunity to seize everything you ever wanted,
ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Q. Of course, Mark Bland joined today by producer Bobby, as well as Dan Isom, a former city police chief for the city of St. Louis, as well as Tyler Crandall and Lucy Mendez, who's been relatively quiet over there, I have to admit.
I've been, like, paying attention to this story.
All right, so now I was in the middle of explaining to everybody at the bottom of the hour the situation of being an eyewitness. This falls into what you brought up, Bobby, as well as what Dan was talking about. And the idea is that they're used to these police cars coming into this area quite often. So here comes a cop car rolling up on two young black males. They are not thinking twice about this. They just go back to watering their plants. It's a very common occurrence. Right. Not something that they're thinking about at all. Now, here's where it is, and I'm sure, Dan, you can agree with me on this. In most cases, the most important piece to any puzzle when it comes to being a witness is usually the first 15 to 20, the beginning, like the absolute moment things hit the fan. Right. He punched him first. He punched him first. Whatever the argument, bar fight, it doesn't matter. It's that first moment. Now, if you're used to cops rolling up and talking to gentlemen in your neighborhood and people in your neighborhood, you're not paying attention. They're having their conversation. By the time you notice or witness something, usually it's a scuffle or something audible that is out of the norm that you catch in your ear, and then you turn around. By that point, you're 20 seconds in. By that point, he shoots him once. He gets out of the car. The kid stumbles and runs away, and he shoots him again. Then the kid turns around, and then it's just the cop shot the kid with his hands above his head. And when they are done with that, because they don't have that first 15 to 20 second piece, right, okay, that's where the stereotypes come in. It's obviously the dirty cop. It's got to be the dirty cop. Just gun this kid down. He had his hands above his head, and that's what a dirty cop would do. I've seen it in the movies. I've seen it when these cops come in here. They harass my people all the time. That's what they would do.
Well, I mean, it's true that, you know, people usually don't see the entire incident.
Right.
Especially if you're just a random bystander. Nothing would draw your attention to the start of the incident unless you just happen to be looking that way when it happened. So witnesses often see bits and pieces of the entire story.
Right.
They don't see the entire story. And then even the person who is actually involved in the incident.
Sometimes they're emotionally charged. There's things that slip
adrenaline's going. And sometimes they recall things differently. I mean, it's just the way that people process information. You could have two officers on the scene who give slightly different stories about the same incident. You can have two witnesses. And so the expectation, and there is this expectation, is that when you interview people, all of the interviews, all the stories will mesh completely together.
Because they assume that it's one same situation. Like, there's major pieces that are not going to change story to story.
Right. So there should be major pieces that are consistent. But there are little details that people see differently and process differently. And as you said, sometimes people see bits and pieces of the entire incident.
Right. And I'm assuming that in this case, maybe, potentially, there was a verbal exchange of some sort between Mike and the officer that maybe was a little bit less curt than they're trying to make it out to be.
Right.
That kind of elevated this. Because here's an officer of 6 years on the force. In 6 years, if he was just, listen, in their minds, the officer comes blazing in, sirens go in, he's got him on the loudspeaker, get down or I'm going to get out of this car and shoot. And then he just got out and he just starts firing while rolling on the ground and he's taking people out. And that's in people's minds, like they'll literally see that. I'm not saying that in this case they saw that, but they'll see that. And the truth is that if he was just this loose cannon that was going out of his mind, he's had so many opportunities of probably easier situations to validate potentially pulling his gun and killing someone than this moment.
Yeah. I mean, the critical question will be what happened after he was pulled over. You know,
I find it odd that he needed to pull his gun. I find it odd that he needed to pull his gun. I'm like, what? Now, if the original story that everybody heard is correct or was even close to correct, supposedly some people robbed or stole things from the Quick Trip. And then the police were called. They were given a description. And supposedly the cop, of course, they're going to put it out APB, right? He sees the two that match the description. It's 2014, guys. Okay, this isn't the 1850s. We're not it's not like the candles that are lighting our, you know, where we eat and everything at night. It's lit up stores, full cameras, everything like that. They're going to notice a 300-pound, 6'4" dude. They're going to notice what he's wearing, and they're going to say he's wearing this color shirt, this color pants, he's this tall, and this he's got a buddy with him or whatever like that. Like, they're going to notice this. So if they roll up on that guy and they see him, he's just going to engage. Like, not pull gun, but I'm just saying he's going to engage that individual, which would make sense to where, like, he'd have reason to come up on him.
Right.
But then, like I said, Dorian's story seems plausible. Like, you know, nobody's arguing the fact that there was a scuffle and something happened within the car range, like within the doorway in the area of the driver's seat.
Right. Well, I mean, if he did pull his weapon, which, you know, we're not sure right now, we haven't heard the officer's story. We only have one side of the story at this point in time, or at least a couple different stories from people who saw different versions.
That's a great question I have for you. I've got a great question for you. Right now, just popped into my head while you're talking about this. Why haven't they had the officer talk yet? Because if you are dead to rights, you know that this kid's story is wrong and you shot that guy specifically on purpose because you were 100% convicted that you were right. Wouldn't you want to get that out there as fast as you can and be like, no, this is what happened. Don't even go down that road.
Well, you know, honestly, in a perfect world for an investigation, you don't want any statements out there because people tend to color their statements based on what they've heard. And so you would like for everyone to come forward with their version of what happened in their mind. So if the officer comes out with his statement that I did A, B, C, and D, and you have someone who wants to refute that, then they can start to shift their statement to refute what the officer is saying. And so it's good to have a clean slate so everyone comes in with their own view of what happened. And as you get more and more versions out there, for example, even with Dorian's story, so he's told it over and over again. Is there the possibility that somebody could come in and say, I was there too?
He starts to believe his own story, so it becomes more.
Not him, or someone could say, I want to help this cause, right?
Right.
And so I've heard his story over and over again, so I'm going to give bits and pieces of the story to support his. Or I'm going to add to what I've seen because I've heard him. Mm-hmm. So you really don't want to give out information in an investigation until you've done the full investigation. Because one thing, if you actually say what people are saying, you can give credibility to certain interviews over other ones. And so from an investigative standpoint, you probably don't want to put out any information until you've collected it all, process it, and then make a determination on what actually happened.
Fair enough. Now, all this, go ahead, Bobby.
Well, I was just going to say, social media is destroying this altogether because, well, two things. A,
it allows the blind to lead the blind. Well, Let's just be honest. That's what social media does. It allows the blind to lead the blind.
But
okay?
Like these YouTube videos that I've gone on record before and said that I absolutely hate because.
You love the anonymous stuff. Like,
no, God.
Not
those.
Don't you even try to act like you like don't.
You were talking about the 15 to 20 seconds, okay? You watch these videos where people are rolling up on scenes of officers and stuff. You're not seeing that first 15 to 20 second interaction where it triggers the officer to react the way that they react. But everybody is basing, like, there's a guy on my page. He bases his opinion on these videos. And he's like, this is the reason why police are corrupt, and this is why this happens, and blah, blah, blah. And it's not because of that. You don't see, it's a one-sided story. You don't see the other side where the officer's trying to help someone cross a street or whatever. Maybe that's not a good scenario, but the officer's trying to help with something, and this guy rolls up three different times.
Now, we've talked about that on the show before. Yeah.
Now he's antagonizing the officer. Now he's impeding on an investigation, essentially. Right. So that officer reacts the way he does because now you're obstructing justice.
Now, what that goes back to more is the riots. The riots that eventually came out because of the killing of Michael Brown. People were holding a candlelight vigil. That candlelight vigil started to dissipate, but there was evidently a angry contingent of young people that were a part of this. And I'm not just knocking young people in St. Louis. I don't want them to get the wrong idea, but it was mostly people of a younger stature that happened to decide to take the ball and run with it.
It was apparently, okay, from what I heard,
yes,
the new chief of staff is what they call him. For the new Black Panther Party.
Ah, I see. Well, that's some great...
Has come into St. Louis.
That's great conjecture right there. You also said that Sandy Hook didn't exist. So, okay. All right. Gosh. I've heard about the Shaka guy or whatever his name is.
Yeah,
yeah, we get it. Or right. Sean or Chon or whatever
his
it is.
Picture,
who cares?
His picture is on... He was on... They showed him physically Fox 2.
No. He's not a bad person. Listen. He's got his beliefs, and he's going to have his driving issues and agenda for what he wants to push. I'm not against the new Black Panther Party. I'm not against anybody. Like, right. I want everybody to have their fair say of what they feel that they should do or whatever, and that's fine, you know, as long as it's not trying to kill human beings,
right.
Short of that. But you have this riot situation that pops off with these younger people. You know what I'm saying, Bobby?
Right.
And then from there, we get the whole video aspect that starts to hit social media, the pictures, the videos. And now what you have is, okay, I've got to help all of you out there, okay? Ladies and gentlemen, you freaking morons, okay? It's 24.
The best thing is Tyler's reaction to you was like, oh my God, did he say that?
It's 2014. No. It's 2014. The same stuff that they use for Iraq and other places, like gear to handle situations of this magnitude, is the same everywhere. Stop posting pictures that go, I thought this was Iraq. And it's a picture of a guy on top of a thing over in Ferguson. You know what I mean? Right. It looks like Iraq to me. Military police state. Okay, first off, let's also correct all of you out there that are going all over the social media for the last week and complaining about this, okay? It's not the entire city of Ferguson that has been shut down. It's not like all the way from West Florissant Avenue up by the old 270 drive-in, all the way down to Lucas and Hunt, all the way. No, it's not the entire, literally, it's 1x1 mile sections that happen to be the hotbed of whatever is going on. They're shutting them down in certain spots.
And the main portion is West Florissant and Chambers.
Yeah, over by the police station where, like there's the old town area that's now got, like, Ferguson Brewery and all that. It's open. People are eating lunch. Yeah. They're fine. Well, there's nobody doing anything. Like, there's a police presence heightened.
Yeah.
But it's not shut down military style.
No, it's not. It's not the entire city of Ferguson. And social media does create a new challenge for police departments. Information spreads so rapidly. Rumors go around
Information from dumb people who are not responsible with how they handle themselves spreads rapidly.
But if
because Bobby's older, you're older, I'm older, we're not going to just post anything.
But if we think about it, the same dumb information was spread from person to person. It's just being spread in a different fashion right now. Right.
True.
And so it makes it more rapid, and it creates challenges for law enforcement. And so You really have to get out in front of it and use, you know, traditional media and even social media to try to combat how swiftly that misinformation goes out into the community. But it is a challenge for police departments and even the challenge, and I'm sure they had to deal with it in this situation. Once things start to occur, you have through social media a rush of people to the area, people who want to see what's going
on,
people who want to get involved.
They're using the social media also during these situations to talk to each other.
Right.
They can get police scanner channels up on their cell phones. They can listen to what's going on around them, and then they can send a message to this guy or that guy or this person.
Right. But the other side of it is that, you know, for people for which this is, and I think
is for people, by the way.
Yeah.
Good call.
For people who think that this is, you know, a very important issue, and it is a very important issue, it brings attention to it. You know, it brings a lot more attention than it would have brought, you know, without social media. So it's good and bad.
By the way, everyone out there, none of you loved Robin Williams as much as a parent loves their child. Stop acting like Robin Williams dying is the most important thing that's ever happened in the history of man. I love Robin Williams. My name is Mark. That sounds like Mork when you're 6 years old, okay? Mork from Ork, okay? That's all I'm saying.
Did you really just do that?
Yeah, man. That is ridiculous. I love Robin Williams. He's a very talented man, and I loved a lot of his movies. But I am not going to sit there, CNN, Fox News, and everywhere else, and do, like, sweeping 5 to 7 hour coverage of Robin Williams' death and just, like, the front gate of his house where they've just put stuffed teddy bears and everything else while there's entire riots going on in the middle of our country over racial tensions and the idea of the government and police versus the citizens. That's a bigger story. Hey, they do it over in Gaza and Iraq and everywhere, and you think it's the biggest story in the world, and you need to talk about it every day.
It happens here. It's just a very negative thing, though, I think. It is. And Robin Williams' death, I'm not like saying it's a thing.
Oh, you're
going
to. That was positive?
I love Robin Williams.
He was a great actor.
It's also the illness of the depression and all that stuff that everybody's on. There's a lot of people that suffer through that, Mark.
Okay, fair enough. But let's be honest, guys, okay? Is anyone in this room going to look me in the face and go, I've never been depressed in my life? Have you been depressed, Dan?
Yes.
Have you been depressed, Bobby?
Yeah.
Have you been depressed?
Yes, sir.
Have you been depressed?
No.
You've never been depressed in your entire life.
I bet you're depressed when Darcy Dixon whooped your ass.
I am not knocking Robin Williams. I'm not knocking suicide victims. I'm not knocking anyone in those families of a suicide victim. I've been heavily depressed in my life. to come on with this type of an attitude day to day, week to week, and not have depression hit you heavily is ridiculous to think. And it hit me very heavily. Medications have had to been used in the past. I'm not saying long term or anything like that, but yes, I get that depressed. I did hang myself and kill myself. By the way, most of the depression from money. That's right.
Yeah.
Can anyone in this room tell me to my face Robin Williams was poor? Go ahead. I'm waiting.
That has nothing to do with it.
Oh, yeah. I think it does.
I don't think it does.
For a lot of people, depression stems from middle class and down because of money. I think that that is the gateway lead drug into what brings them down. Some people, it's alcoholism after the fact. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then they use the alcohol to sully that. Like he was using the alcohol to sully whatever problems he had. But what I'm saying is that if you had it made and things were going, and you were that age, you're that age. That's the other thing, guys. We're in 63. Our 60s, 63 years old. Okay. He's not 40. I'm getting ready to turn 40 soon. He's not 22. He's not River Phoenix, okay? He's 63. He's kind of done a lot. There are grandparents who die at 63 all the time, you know, and they just die from old age. Like, that's their version of old age. That's my point. Like, I'm not knocking Robin Williams.
Old age?
Well, yeah, for some people, they die of natural causes at 63, and natural causes is technically old age. I mean, there's other things that make up natural causes, too.
I'm halfway there.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway.
Hi, Dios mio.
I didn't mean to get sidetracked. I apologize to everyone out there who's listening. To get back to what we're talking about, the riots, I feel that one of the problems with the social media that we were bringing up is the fact that now people are doing exactly what you said, Bobby. They're going up. They're provoking verbally. If they're not saying F you pig or calling a cop some dirty name or something like that, they're going up and just their tone and inflection of their voice is a very divisive as well as pushy attitude ridden tone that they are using to try to get something out of the police. They're trying to get them to pop up a little bit.
Well, what do you think, you know, obviously, you know, this is completely different than I'm sure a lot of things you've handled. But what do you think these people, these officers, you know, St. Louis County, Ferguson, should do to kind of subdue this? How do you think they can stop this?
Well, I think they've done a good job so far. They've shown quite a bit of restraint in how they've dealt with the situation. But, you know, it's like any crisis situation. You really have to get out in front of it. You have to direct your attention towards the people who seem to be leaders in the group and try to reach out to them and hope for some reconciliation, hear what people have to say. Most of the time, people want to just voice their frustration and anger and find in a forum where they can do that in a peaceful way. And so I think they're trying to do that, have forums where they can bring people in, have them discuss whatever problems that they have with the police, and give them a chance to vent. And then hopefully going forward, you know, there will be some common ground that they can work on in terms of bridging whatever gap that they might have between the police and the citizens.
With that coming to the police, how do you get them to feel that though the police aren't bad?
It's a challenge.
Going back to that.
I don't have the exact answer to that. I mean, it's a challenge that you have in many urban neighborhoods and, you know, suburban neighborhoods are that surround the inner ring of suburban communities. And, and if we're honest, it's oftentimes in large or predominantly African-American communities and police. And so it's a constant struggle to figure out how you can have positive relationships with the community. It is challenging, but it's something that you have to work on a constant basis. In cases like this, you really need to forge that relationship beforehand, though, because in a crisis is really when you need relationships. Right. Not when everything is going good. It's really when things turn bad.
That's what's really weird about this entire situation with these riots that have just recently happened here. Like in the Rodney King case and in other cases throughout history, they usually waited till after the verdict, after everything was turned in, post. You know, and in this case, it's happened prior to. Not even all the facts have come out. The other the police officer involved in the shooting hasn't spoken. Like, it's almost as if they've created their own reason and verdict to be angry about. And then now, I think that it's kind of shifted a little bit. I think on the first night, that it was people seriously wanted peace, and young people took advantage and scapegoated the situation to their advantage so that they could go and be stupid. But now I think with the continued police presence over the last week in the city, I think that it's slowly starting to become a people versus the police kind of attitude. They're starting to see that.
Yeah. Well, I think the Michael Brown case is somewhat unique in that you often don't have an encounter where the person doesn't have a weapon at all. And then the other part is that, you know, for the most part, we haven't heard anything very negative about him as well. So, you know, oftentimes it's okay, this guy was a gangbanger, a drug dealer. Not that that makes a difference.
It was released. He had no criminal background.
But there's nothing in this situation on his face right now that would suggest that he would be a person who would do something like this. Now, we don't know what happened, like you said, in that encounter. But and so I think that's why it's a little bit different. But I agree. Usually it happens, you know, after there's a verdict or, you know, maybe there's a conclusion that's made about the investigation. In this case, it sparked very, very rapidly.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break here on The Q. We are at the top of the hour for CBS Fox News, as well as you're listening to us on 1380 The X and 1380TheX.com, as well as 1420 WINI. And check us out worldwide at TheQNow.com. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dr. Dan Isom, former city police chief for the city of St. Louis, as well as Tyler Crandall, Lucy Mendez, and Bobby Hickman. We'll be back right after this.
Best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
Welcome back to The Q, of course. Mark Bland joined today. Former St. Louis City Police Chief Dan Isom, producer Bobby, Lucy Mendez, and the player and lover of the North County song,
Tyler. The player and the lover.
The player and the lover.
I do like the shirt, though.
Tyler's like, I think he just got a new title.
He's a very fit man. Are you a CrossFit man?
Yes, sir.
Oh, my God. We're going to get into that in a bit.
CrossFit games are actually pretty entertaining.
Stop it. Yeah, I bet you they are.
They're on ESPN right now.
Have you ever seen The Exorcist do exercising? Yeah, man. It's very entertaining. Like, legitimately. Are you kidding me? Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking about the Michael Brown case and the fact that the city of Ferguson here outside of St. Louis, Missouri, is dealing with rioting as well as racial tensions over the last week because of the 18-year-old child by the name of Michael Brown being gunned down in the middle of the street by a Ferguson police officer. It has sparked outrage in this community and has become a national story, even bigger than Robin Williams. Yeah, I said it. That's right, Lucy. And we're talking with the police chief, former police chief, Dan Isom, who's stood at that podium many times. What's the biggest case that you ever were over the top of during your tenure as chief?
Well, there were a lot of them, but probably the biggest case in terms of national news was the shooting, the ABB shooting that happened.
ABB shooting?
I think it was the winter of 2012 or so. So there was an employee who came in this company on, I think it's Bercher and around Union.
Okay.
And
you can see the building from the highway.
There were four or five employees who were shot inside the building. So that was a pretty significant case.
Wow. So you've been on that podium. You know what it's like to be John Bellmer, the chief for the city of St. Louis County.
Yes.
As well as I'm drawing a blank here on the chief for Ferguson.
Tom Jackson.
And you know what it's like to be up there. What's going through these guys' head? You know, because if you don't know this, and we don't need to play it, but Anonymous. Does everybody in this room know who Anonymous is? No. Lucy, do you know who Anonymous is?
Yes.
Okay. Anonymous is a group of young individuals between the ages of 18 all the way up into the 50s that's randomly strewn throughout the United States and the world. They became popular because of a group, a board called 4chan back in the day. They have a section on 4chan called B, which is random, where everybody posts anonymously, so therefore they become anonymous, and therefore they're very bright people. I mean, some of these people run some of the largest internet security firms in the United States, and on the side, they just do this stuff. Now, anonymous is not by nature good or bad. They are, as they like to say, we are legion. That's what they're legion. Whoa. Yes, they are legion. And they like to wear Guy Fawkes masks like V for Vendetta. And the whole idea is they want to bring the system down. Kind of like we talk about in professional wrestling with the Shield when they first came out, how they were supposed to be the purveyors of all things that are going to be judged in the WWE. That's who Anonymous believes that they are. Okay. And they are very good at what they do. And they can get whatever they want whenever they want. And so you have a guy like John Bellmer, who is the police chief for St. Louis County. He's heading up the investigation along with the FBI right now. And Anonymous tagged his wife, his daughter, his sons. They got pictures from inside their house. They posted his actual front of his house and the address for where you can go to catch up with John Bellmer. So if this goes sideways, we all got his address. We know where he lives. Like, it's that
serious. Did that turn out to be the correct address? Because from what I heard, that was his old address.
Very
that
possible.
He doesn't live at anymore.
I wouldn't put it past him at all.
Right.
So we'll just keep it.
So, you know, I know Chief Bellmer, and I know the last thing that's on his mind is his personal safety. You know, what he's thinking about right now is, how can I do the best job to make sure that the truth comes out in this investigation? That's really what he wants. And, you know, he's got multiple constituents that he has to deal with. I mean, he's got the family of Mike Brown. He has the officer. He has political officials. He's got clergy. He's got the community. And so he's got multiple balls that he's trying to juggle in the air and trying to make sure he, in some way, satisfies the needs of all these different constituents in his community. And it's a juggling act that's very difficult for you to manage. But, and not only that, you know, he has the ongoing situation of the people who are protesting, and he's trying to give them their right to free speech, right? But also, he has to make sure he controls the situation. And so there's a balancing act that he has to.
And I'm glad that you brought up the balancing act, because I have a serious question for you. Being a black gentleman, what is your age, sir? I'm sorry.
47.
47 years old. And obviously, you were also a police officer, so you have that going for you. How much of this is white versus black race? And how much of this is the police versus the citizens? The government versus the citizens, in your mind? Like, when you look at it from both perspectives yourself.
So it's probably some of both. I mean, Americans have a tradition of being independent, and we don't want the government in our lives, and we want to be able to walk down the street and do what we want to do. I mean, that's consistent among all Americans. But I think we all would be, you know, telling a lie if we didn't say it had something to do with race, right?
I mean, of course, I feel it totally does.
It certainly has a racial component to it. And
I almost feel like the racial component might be kind of the catalyst for some of this rioting. Like, you know, I think that there's this blatant underlying racial tension within the St. Louis area, because you had white flight back in the 50s, and you have the city, which represents the majority of black culture in the St. Louis area, and then you have the counties, for the most part, which represent white culture in the St. Louis area. Like, it's right. There's, I mean, now don't get me wrong, it's flushed out throughout there. There's multiple white people that live in the city, there's multiple black people that live in the counties too, but like, if you were to break down the majorities, there is a split there. Like, that 270 corridor split, like, there really is.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's multiple things that you have to look at. It's race, but it's also class as well.
Oh, yes, very much so.
And class within the African-American community. So, you know, here's the issue, is that when you have areas, whether it's black or white, that have crime problems, it's going to receive more police attention. And in the case of North County or North City, we find that tension is oftentimes focused on the African-American community, and particularly young black males.
Yeah, we also have to talk about, you know, one of the things that's been popping up a lot because of this case has been the breakdown of statistics when it comes to how many stops, traffic stops, things like that in Ferguson, of black versus white versus other ethnic origins and stuff like that. And we've come to realize that, like, there is a heavy presence of ticketing and stops for black motorists and people like that in the community over there as opposed to white. But here's my argument on that, to defend the police, okay? They're in a largely populated black community. Like, I think the, hold on, I have the breakdown right here. Racial makeup of the city of Ferguson, you ready? 29% white, 67.4% African American, 4.4%, less than a percent, Native American, 0.5 Asian, 0.4 other races, and two from two or more races, which would be mixed, mulatto, right. You know, Hispanic, Latino, whatever, like that.
I feel like the minority.
You are the minority, but that's my point. My point is that 67% of the people that live in Ferguson are black. When they're sitting on random stop signs, street corners, and things like that, they're going to see, on typical average, more black motorists than they're going to see white motorists.
Yeah, they tried to make a big thing about it in 2013. Of 5,349 traffic stops, 4,683 of them were African American.
Right, but if you live in St. Louis, you know that Ferguson and that North County corridor. Like, listen, if I'll throw it to you, Dan. I'll throw it to you, Tyler. You're from Hazelwood, right?
Yes, I am.
What year did you graduate high school?
2008.
Oh, I was 1990. I was 1994 from McClure North. Now, in 1994 in Florissant, Missouri, the breakdown was probably 60-40 white, actually. I would say close to 60-40 white, maybe even 70-30 white back in 1994. Right now in Florissant, I would say that their breakdown is probably close to Ferguson, 65-70 black versus 25-30% white. Like, times change. People move. Like, have you noticed a larger black presence, or has it looked the same to you for the majority of your life or back when you were graduating high school?
For the majority of my life, I'd say it's been consistent.
You don't think that there's been much of a change?
Not much, not in my lifetime. I don't
right,
feel
fair
like.
Enough, fair enough. I mean, I'm a little older than you, 38. Sure. I mean, I've been around a little bit longer, so I've seen a few different things. I remember when there was a water slide in Lindbergh in New Hall's Ferry. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, you and I, we've talked about it because where I live now, you know that area pretty well, and you were talking about it while we were hanging out one night.
I've been to January Wabash Park 1,000 times. Yeah. I hosted a television show from there. I did their 4th of July picnic, and it wasn't bad. Like, listen, I'm not going to knock Ferguson. Let's put that out there right now. I know that we've done a majority of the show. Ferguson's a good city.
It is a good city.
It's a good city. There's a lot of good cities up in this area and up in North County. I am not going to knock, Hazelwood. But, like, there's a lot of good cities up in North County for the majority and the most part, okay? I mean, I have to be careful. Like, you know what I'm saying? But yeah,
I wouldn't consider it a very high crime area.
No, I wouldn't consider it a high crime area either.
So that's the problem, is a lot of people are seeing this on TV. And I have a friend that lives in New York, in Brooklyn. And he's calling me and he's like, are you still alive? And
I'm doing it in Russian.
Hello, my friend. Are you still alive?
That's probably how it sounded on the phone.
Yes, but I'm like,
this is Kova.
Hello, my name is Kova. How you doing today?
But he's like, is everything okay? And I'm like, yeah, everything's fine. Why? And he's like, well, I'm seeing pictures on CNN, and I'm seeing pictures on MSNBC, and the town is being burned to the ground, essentially.
Bobby's like, no, I moved out of the black area a while ago.
And I'm like, no, everything's fine, because we knew it, because we're talking about our friend Koba. We knew it when we went to high school together, because he was an exchange student here. We knew it as a quiet place. I think the most that ever happened.
It still is a quiet place. Let's not even go down that road. Like, yeah, right, they have more crime, no more or less compared to any other area around there. Yeah. By any means whatsoever. It's still a quiet area.
I think it is. It's a predominantly quiet area. I think the thing we have to think about, though, is, you know, it's not normal for people to hate the police, right? The police are supposed to be there to protect you. They're supposed to be your safeguard. And so when a community doesn't believe that the police are their protectors, there's got to be something wrong. It's not like that in my community. It's predominantly African American.
This is the catalyst to open up the can of worms to what's really going on in Ferguson's police force, potentially.
Yeah, but we've never seen anything else in Ferguson happen that would cause us to suspect anything else. There's never been a situation where this officer came up and beat up, right, you know, this person.
So I don't think this is really all about Ferguson, right? It happened in Ferguson.
I think it's just the catalyst community around multiple communities.
So people keep saying, well, the people who are in here rioting or protesting, they're not from Ferguson. And that's probably true to a sense. There are people from all over the metropolitan area who have problems with the police and find this as the flashpoint for them coming out and protesting. And so it's more of a wider discussion about why are there certain groups of people who have such a frustration with the police? And we know that that's generally not normal. In neighborhoods where, you know, everything is fine and people are going to school, they generally love the police.
Yep.
Right. And so something is happening here. And we really need to try to figure out what it is.
I know that this was a very serious flashpoint because I want to talk about this for just a minute. This past weekend was my 20th high school reunion. 20th.
Damn.
That's right. 20 years. 20 years. Yeah, that's correct. Stop. Okay. 20 years. And first off, I had no idea that Michael Brown had been shot or killed. We did it at Ferguson Brewing Company, which is about three or four blocks away from the Ferguson Police Department. Okay. Nice restaurant, very well, and I want to say thank you to Carrie Watson, Carrie Deloy, whatever her name is now. She's married since, you know, I didn't get a chance to really catch that, but
Miss Carrie.
To Miss Carrie for putting together a fantastic 20th high school reunion for me. I thought it was pleasurable, and we all had a really good time. But we're standing outside, I'm having a cigarette with a couple of other old classmates, and it's me, a gentleman by the name of Robert Tudor, and his girlfriend who are standing off to the side talking, as well as this guy named Ryan and his girlfriend, and Reggie Wilkes, who's a good friend of mine from high school. Reggie's the only black male who's out there. And we're all standing there, and we're smoking cigarettes, and we're talking, and all of a sudden comes the candlelight vigil of about 60 to 80 black people walking past the front area of Ferguson Brewery. Now, as they come by, the older black people in the candlelight vigil being very quiet, solemn, singing their songs, whatever. They're just on their way to do their thing. It was the young, wild ones out front that had to be calmed down by the other older black people that were with them that looked at us specifically, pointed and said, "We need to kill all these white people like them," and pointed right at me and my few high school friends. And Reggie said, "You need to move on with all that." Like, you know, and then turned to us and was like, "Don't say anything. Don't say anything." And it's like, you know, just was like, "You need to get on out of here with all that." Like, and I had no idea that Michael Brown had been shot or killed. I had no idea what they were saying or why they were saying it. It was just really surreal to me because I thought it was like a national night out or something right. like that. And so I think that that's how flashed it got. Like, it was literally, we went from this happened to that's it. We want to kill white people. And that's in the young minds. That's right. Not every person. I don't want it to get wrong. So.
Yeah, I you know, that certainly there are some people who think that way. I don't think that's in the mind of every person, but it is a flashpoint for a group of people who are frustrated with where they are in their life and with the police. And so it's always something in the middle, right? You know, there are people in the community who need to examine their behavior. And realistically, as a police officer for 25 years, we need to examine our behavior too.
Sure.
We need to look at, hey, what can we do as we police these very challenged, you know, areas that may not have high crime, but they have all those social problems that right, lead right. to disorder. And people who don't necessarily think like us and sometimes don't act like us, how do we deal with them? And people who are frustrated.
Right.
You know,
definitely.
How do you deal with people like that? And then the people have some responsibility as well. You know, how do you interact with police?
I do have a quick question for you. Have you, since this has all popped off, have you been in contact with anybody from the police department over there, old colleagues of yours, the family, anything like, have you been involved in anything whatsoever?
No, I haven't been involved at all.
But you've been watching from afar.
Been watching from afar and certainly hoping that, of course, no one else gets hurt.
Of course.
And that, you know, we're able to hopefully have some good that comes out of this, you know?
Yeah, that's a really good point. Now, how long were you police chief?
I was police chief for 4 years.
For four solid years. What made you leave being a police chief? Was there a reason why, or was it just you felt it was time to move on, you were ready to retire? What was the catalyst for you?
So I became police chief at 20 years, and then when I assigned my initial contract, it was for 3 years with two 1 year renewal
options,
period.
Yeah.
Okay. And for a total of 5 years. So it was only a 5 year deal. One of the things
that seems so odd that they would sign you like it's a record deal.
Like, sounds like an Albert Pujols.
Like you would think that, like, if you just do good, they're like, you're going to become our police chief now, and you're going to be there until we feel like you need to go away, whether that's 4 years, five years, 15 years.
It is sort of strange, but, you know, if people remember how I became chief and the circumstances beforehand, they wanted to make sure that they didn't have a chief that was difficult to remove. If in fact it didn't work out, right?
Because the chief before you was there for quite some time.
Joe Mokwa, right?
He was there for 7 years. So that was
Mokwa, right?
Yes, Joe Mokwa. So that was the deal. You had 5 years and you were out. Now, after 3 years, they said, okay, we can renew. And if you want to get rid of the contract, you can. I said, no, the deal was 5 years, but give me 2 years instead of these 1 year renewals. That gives me a little bit more stability.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to just be trying to figure it out.
Right. And so most people didn't know that I had a PhD. And so I had always thought about being a professor. Going
we're talking about that off the air. Yeah.
Academia and my second career. And so it was a natural, progression, I guess, for me to move from this job that I had said originally I would only take for 5 years. And I kind of viewed myself as sort of the change agent on the police department. Anybody who comes in as a change agent usually is not there for very long.
True.
Because you've got
to do some things. It's a transitionary situation.
It's a transition job. You have to do some things that sometimes don't make people very happy. And so I viewed myself as that transitional leader in the organization.
Yeah, but it's a nice bump on your resume. Let's be honest. You know what I'm saying? It looks good.
It was good. And I think I did my job. I believe that the chief that came in after me came in very good, stable circumstances and was able to continue to move the police department forward. So I felt good about leaving at the time that I left.
We only got a couple of minutes here left with you, Dan, and I really do appreciate you being on the show today to talk to us with this. Real quickly, what are your viewpoints now on this Michael Brown case? Where do you stand? Kind of what are you looking for as a former chief of police yourself? Like, where do you see this filtering out?
Well, I think based on what's happened so far, it's good that it's moved to the Department of Justice, because there's certainly a breakdown in the trust that we have in the community. And so like to see that investigation do their due diligence, but be speedy with it, because people do need some answers. And then hopefully going forward, there will be a regional dialogue about police relationships with communities, not just Ferguson, but the entire region will talk about it. And as I said, you know, both sides will examine, you know, what do we need to do to make this better? Hopefully that continues. Oftentimes what happens is once the cameras go away and everybody settles down, then you kind of go back to what it was,
what you were doing before, and it becomes an issue.
And
it becomes a big issue, because now the seed's already been laid. The tensions have already been, like, popped off once. They're just bottling now. Slowly bottling, week to week, month to month, until the next situation pops off. And when it pops off, it becomes a much larger issue.
10 times worse than what happened.
Yeah.
And we've had the first sort of incident where we've had this disorder. We've never had that before in St. Louis. And so you're right. If we don't address it, it might be worse the next time.
I don't want this to become Memphis. That's what worries me, because if you've ever been to Memphis, to this day, because of Martin Luther King, that city is divided white-black. Like, it is very racially charged, and, like, there is no leadway on either side of the game for the most part. Like, it's they stay on their side, we stay on ours, and, like, we very rarely, you know, transition. And, like, I just don't want St. Louis to go that route.
No, and I think we can work on this. I mean, I think there are cities that have really done some good work. You know, when you go to other cities, you get the feel that people have sort of reconciled some of their differences, and people are more comfortable with each other, living together. You know, most people talk about New Orleans and corruption and all that kind of. But one of the things I like about New Orleans is that feel
it's diverse,
that is diverse, and people can live next to each other and feel very comfortable next to each other. And that's the way we need to get in St. Louis.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Dan Isom, former chief of police for the city of St. Louis. I appreciate. Thank you so much for coming on the queue today.
It was great.
I think you really opened up the eyes and the minds of a lot of people out there about certain tactics, ideals about the police, as well well as this entire Michael Brown case. And we appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us today.
Thank you.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Tyler Crandall, he is live in the studio. He's going to talk with us, and we'll be back on the queue right after this. You know, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the queue. Of course, my name is Mark Bland, and we are joined today by Dan Isom, who has since left us, former police chief, talking about the Michael Brown case. Yep. And we really appreciate his time
Absolutely.
That he put in to talk to ourselves. But the show must go on. We are going to move forward, and we are going to, well, we're going to get hot and heavy with a gentleman by the name of Tyler Crandall. What's up, Tyler?
Not much.
Thank you so much for being patient.
Hey, no problem, you know.
Had a, you know, it's a tough situation to discuss and talk about, you know, and unless you're really, like, on top of it, like, I'm not saying that other people aren't on top of it, but, like, I have obviously a feel for this situation that I really wanted to get out there, and I thought it was very important. And let's talk a little bit about you, because you're from North County.
That's right.
And that's where Ferguson is based, is in North County.
Correct.
I'm from North County. Bobby's from North County.
Sure.
Lucy?
Kansas.
From there Dodge City, Kansas.
That's right, Dodge City, Kansas. And so we all have kind of, and even Dan, when he was still here, he said he was from north side of St. Louis, which is just on the outskirts of North County.
Right.
So, like, we have a vested interest in this. And you, sir, have, what is, jeez, man. It's, listen.
It's what happens when you, you know, on hiatus.
It's almost like Don Imus, like, started Don production Imus? On my show. Like, are you okay?
Who's that be?
Jeez, man.
Cut.
So, Tyler, back to you. I was first hip to your song because of our friend Bobby over here, producer Bobby. He was the one who caught on to your song, and he's like, dude, Mark, you've got to hear this being from North County like us. Now I said something to you on the way in, now, did I not? That you probably have not heard my show. See, I have kind of a North County love hate. I mean, obviously, I'm from North County. I grew up in North County. Love North County to an extent, but I love North County pre-1998. Like, that's kind of the North County, because North County, let's be 2000 before North County, great, beautiful, love it. Now North County, I live there still. I live in Hazelwood, over by and behind Hazelwood West, that area over there. And so I see North County in a different light now. I'm older. A little bit more mature, and I just don't have enough Carhartt jackets, pits for pit fires, and enough Natty Light 30 packs ready to roll at all times with some cargo pants and flip-flops to really jump in hardcore on the North County the way a lot of other people do. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, it's just not my thing. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like, I worked all week. I got to get drunk all weekend. That's not my thing, okay? Which I feel like if the people were rioting here in the St. Louis area, if they would just get drunk, maybe they would riot less. Like, they would be so worried about just enjoying their buzz. Maybe that would help out. But not to make light. I mean, we're not knocking anything that we've talked about on the show. But, you know, I want to lighten the mood up a little bit here. So so you're from Hazelwood?
Hazelwood. Live in Florissant. Yeah.
Gotcha. We're at around Florissant. Where do you call the area? Where's your spot? I mean, I don't need specific cross streets and an address. I'm just talking about, like, general, like, by Hazelwood Central itself.
Oh, it's yeah, very close to Hazelwood Central.
Okay, so, like, the Barrington Downs, the whole area right around there.
Correct.
Okay, fair enough. And born and raised there, obviously.
Yes.
And you have this, I've noticed, I saw multiple videos on your YouTube page.
Okay.
Because I listened to the song.
Right.
And then I, you know, clicked on your face and I went and looked and see what kind of videos and stuff like that. You have multiple songs where you just kind of, like, grab the guitar and just go to town.
Sure.
And so was this the first song, or was this just one of the ones that kind of randomly popped up in your forte of doing this?
Oh, no, I've been writing songs since I was probably 13.
Right. Have you always wanted to be in a band or something?
Yeah.
Or?
I always wanted to aspire to be a musician, or, you know, be in a band, something musical, something creative.
Right. And then, so you basically just decided YouTube. That's where it's at. Just grab the guitar and let's put a camera on myself.
Yeah, YouTube's fun.
Fair enough. No, it is. It's a good place. And if you're trying to get out to the world, right. I can't think of a better place to go than YouTube, where, you know, you can put it up there just like anybody else. The opportunity is there. Usually the audio quality is really good. You know, got a decent camera. you're good to go. So why?
It's working. He's here.
What? Yeah, exactly. He is here. He's That's here. Right. He's here on the queue, which I appreciate. Thank you so much for coming today. And I do want to know, by the way, you're listening to us on 1420 WINI as well as 1380 The X. Every single Saturday on 1420 WINI, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Central Standard yes. Time, as well as 1 to 3 p.m. on Sundays on 1380 The X Central Standard Time. You went on the North County song. Right. Like what? Talk to me about what came up in your mind. Just the idea that you live in North County, or was it something you'd been thinking about? How does this formulate?
Yeah. What I do is oftentimes when I get home from work,
okay,
I'll go lift, I'll go work out. And then between the hours.
Well, hold on before we go any further. You're already,
lift?
You said lift. And let's be honest, like we're not really lifting weights.
Hey, he got a personal best on his clean.
He's really good at exercising good. Okay, like it's kind of where he's at. He's really the best at exercising well. You know what I'm saying? Better than the other exercisers, okay?
Sure.
I'm not going to go say lift specifically. No, you're into CrossFit.
Yeah, CrossFit, weightlifting.
Which me and Dan Walsh have gone in deeply countless number of times just purging our anger towards CrossFit. Not in the fact... Here's the thing. The truth is I like CrossFit. Like, I don't have a problem with it. If I was to go back into doing what I have to do now, I'd probably have to do CrossFit just because it's not the typical style.
Right.
Like, you know, it's more circuit training, things like that.
Oh, yeah, it's varied.
And it's unique. I like the fact that there's multiple things, like take the big heavy ropes and do the doubles with them and stuff
right.
like that. Like,
right.
it's not just the, let's go lift some weights and chuck it up a few more times. Like, that got quite boring for me, doing that multiple hours.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day when I was an Adonis, because I was an Adonis. Whether you like to believe it or not, that's right.
I think Lucy just threw up a little.
Shut up. It's not very funny. So anyway, you get home from work, you know, exercising, whatever, and then you decide to just...
Yeah, and then, you know, between the hours of usually 10 and midnight, what I'll do is I'll grab the guitar and just play. And I'll write some songs, write some lyrics down.
Do you live on your own?
No, I live with my mom and my dad and
okay,
my brother.
Okay, fair enough. So. Your brother, older, younger?
He's a younger brother.
And what's he think about these things?
He gets pretty excited about it.
He gets a kick out of it?
Yeah, he enjoys it.
He helps promote you. I get it. Fair enough. So what about the North County song? Was this just off the top of your head one day? Or was
it really was. I mean, I can't really explain like how
sure.
you know the idea came to mind. Maybe just like being proud of being from North County, you know?
And there's nothing
Amen.
Wrong with that. I am proud of being from 1994 North County myself.
NoCo, baby!
I am very proud of being from NoCo pre-2000. Myself. So I understand how you feel about that. So please, I guess you threw a lot in there.
Right.
But Bobby has some beef with you.
Uh-oh.
I'm just letting you know, producer Bobby, he's got a little beef with you. I'm over at his house the one night. He goes, did you check out the song? I'm like, yeah, check out the song. And then he throws me with this. Go ahead, hit him with that nugget.
There's two schools you left out. Rittner Huskies and McClure Comets.
Ouch. His
Did
alma
you go
mater.
To one of those?
He went to McClure.
McClure Comet 2006, baby.
Yeah, you kind of right. You forgot about them. And the Suburban North, I mean, there's the flat. They're on every single gym that you go to.
Exactly.
Did you play sports in high school?
I played football my freshman year.
Gotcha.
Broke my leg
Ouch.
In the first game I played. And no kidding, it was the first passing play.
I've got to ask somebody who's been in this position before. Okay, how does that... Like, of course, like, did you break it on the run, or did somebody hit you and break it? Like,
yeah, so I'm dropping back for my first passing play ever.
And you're a quarterback?
I'm a quarterback.
Okay.
And there's, like, a blitz, three-step drop, I get hit, and I just felt, like, this excruciating pain. And that was it.
That's it.
Yeah, and I can tell you that it was at McClure High School.
Where on the leg? Where on the leg? Where on the leg was it? Like
femur.
It was the goodness.
Oh my goodness!
Out, so up top.
Right. Adios, mio.
That's big, dude. That's a major break, man.
Yeah.
That had I can't even imagine.
And it was at McClure.
Because here's the thing: that bone is so big because it handles a lot of your weight of your body.
Oh yeah,
so
it's like, the biggest bone in your body.
To have something this big around break,
snap.
Oh, one place, two place. How long was the recovery?
Just one place. Recovery was probably about 5 months.
Five Jeez. Solid months.
Yeah.
How long were you in a body cast, lower body cast? Were you in the...
What they did is they put pins in my femur.
They put pins in the
like
femur?
Like titanium pins.
Oh, man.
And they went all the way down. And I had those for 5 months, and they had to do surgery again and take them back out.
I almost feel like I'm on his side now that he left McClure comments out. Like, at that point, like, you it's literally traumatic. Ruined my football career in high school. You broke my femur. I don't want to pay you any attention as a school. Mm-hmm. Like, you suck.
It's understood now.
Yeah, we understand. You bowled me over like a comment. So.
Right. Right.
That's horrible, wow. Dude. All right, so you do the North County song out of the sheer love of North County.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how does it catch wind? Like, is it just you posted it and you're just sat back? Or did, like, some people like, wow, this is really good?
You know, that's the crazy thing is I didn't sit down to make a viral video by any means. I just was like, hey, I'm going to write this song and share it with some friends and see if they like it.
Okay.
And then I went to sleep, I think, on Saturday night, and it had 75 hits or something like that. And then Sunday around noon, I looked at it, and it was like 2,000.
And you're like, wow. And I was that like, kind of wow. Caught on a little bit. And is that the biggest video you've ever done?
Yes.
And how many is it sitting at right now currently?
33,000.
33,000.
Yeah.
We need to get that up to 50,000. I think but that I have a video of a wrestling match between me and Donovan Ruddick that's at 50-plus thousand. So if my wrestling match against Donovan Ruddick can get to 50-plus thousand, I think we can get Tyler to 50-plus thousand.
Absolutely.
I think that this is possible, bro. We can do this for you.
I think we're going to.
Is there, no, where's the specific YouTube page where they can go to hear this song?
Well, I mean, you can check out my YouTube channel. I don't know.
YouTube channel. Okay, yeah.
The HTML, who knows?
All right. But is it YouTube /
Tyler Crandall, I believe is what it is.
And spell so. Crandall so that they know.
Yeah, C-R-A-N-D-A-L-L.
So it's two A or an A L and double L.
Correct.
Dandel. Crandall.
That's
Tyler
it.
Crandall.
It,
there it is.
You got it. If you're listening to this right now on 1380 or 1420, when we post this on the website for the podcast version for you to be able to pull later for your goody enjoyment later, we'll have the link to Tyler's video.
Yeah, we'll have it up in the Breaking Point blog. We'll have the video up there so that they can watch it there.
Cool.
And then you get the hits, and yeah. it's all the specialness that it needs to be. All awesome. Right, well, you know what? You're in studio.
I am.
You've got that guitar there. You've been playing it since you were 13 years old. You want to be a rock star, and I love it. And are you a rock star?
No, sir. I'm just an average person.
Just an average guy.
Who works at 8 to 5.
That is the greatest answer I've ever heard.
You're just like Bruce.
I would have said I was a rock star.
You're the Bruce Springsteen of North County. Like you.
That's a compliment, I guess. Thank you.
Yeah, well, yeah. Hell yeah. Who doesn't want to be Bruce Springsteen? That guy's a legend.
He is. He's fantastic. All right,
so we're going to sit back here. And we're going to let Tyler jump in. And rock it out. So I'm ready to hear the live acoustic version of the North County song.
All right, here we go.
Hazelwood Central is where I went to high school. First crush there was Kelly from math. Broke my leg playing football, ended up in a cast. Hawks and Spartans, Stars and Cats. Riverview Rams and the Pattonville Pirates. Suburban North is too legit. Just ask Blue Springs if you don't believe it. No coat is a part of who I am. Lindbergh Shackle for Melampion Graham. I owe a lot to North County. Yeah, I do. Yup. My stellar education, my hip-hop fascination, my love for Italian food, toasted ravioli, marinara, and a cold brew. Saturday morning football games, can't play on Friday nights, cause lights bring fights, but it's all good, yup. Just how we did it in Hazelwood, never learned how to hunt or fish, in the city they ain't got time for that ish. But they taught me how to rock this snapback hat, and I've got North County to thank for that. Before my junior year of high school, I was hanging with my people up at Wedgewood Pool. Mills Mall holds a special place in my heart. Remember going there, getting stopped by Paul Blart. What about Jamestown? It was such a sad day when they shut that place down. So many memories there. We were 13 and we didn't have a care. I owe a lot to North County. Yeah, I do. Yup. My stellar education, my hip-hop fascination, my love for ravioli, marinara, and a cold brew. Saturday morning football games can't play on Friday nights, cause lights bring fights. But it's all good, yep, just how we did it in Hazelwood. Never learned how to hunt or fish in the city, they ain't got time for that ish. But I got every word of country grammar memorized down pat, and I've got North County to thank for that. Down, down, baby, cannolis and cajinos, old town donuts, Mattingly's an emo, shimmy, shimmy, cocoa pop, shimmy, shimmy, wow, I could go for some Fritz's right about now.
All right.
Yes,
very good, sir. Thank you so much. You know, what's really interesting about that song, as well as that that specific piece that he plays, is where he talks about the Friday Night Lights. They can't do it because...
Lights bring fights.
Right. Well, back when I was there, back in North County, McClure North in 94, we didn't have lights. Now, I think they have lights now on the field.
No.
They don't have lights in McClure North on the field.
Nobody's...
No. I think that... Does Central have lights on the field?
No, sir. Saturday morning. That's the only time they play football.
That's the only time.
Like, Saturday morning or early evening football.
Does Pattonville?
Really? I think Pattonville does have lights.
Pattonville's got lights. One of the schools...
Pattonville's
a couple
the
of
field that goes at an arch, though.
Yeah, a couple of the schools have lights, I'm pretty sure. I know that was a big deal that they wanted to get lights. My senior year, they went to the state championship, and they got beat pretty heavily by Jeff City. But at the time, they were talking heavily about wanting to get lights, and I've never understood... why they never did that, because there's other city schools. SLU does it, and SLU's
right.
worse area, I would say.
But that's what I was always told when I was in school, too, you know, that the reason that we didn't have the lights was because, you know, it brought fighting and stuff like that. And my senior year, actually, there was a huge fight that broke out on
Saturday morning.
No. It was actually it was a game that was an early Friday evening game. Like, I think the game was over by 6:30 or something like that. But there was like guns that had gotten drawn out, and somebody actually tried to stab somebody.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
It gets rough over there at the McClure.
At McClure,
right,
man.
On that edge of Ferguson.
That's crazy.
I love how he just, his mention of McClure was the fact that he broke his leg in the song.
See, he mentioned Cuginos in there, but you know, Cuginos didn't exist back when I was growing up in North County.
Like, cannolis?
That was Domenico's, I think.
Domenico's.
Yeah, what about cannolis?
Cannolis is over there by where they do the Valley of the Flowers.
Yeah.
Is that? Yep. Yeah, cannolis was there, but they'd only been open for about 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I don't think it was
when
really
I graduated.
Big.
So, like, I've been to cannolis before.
Yeah.
I think right after I graduated high school, we went to cannolis for dinner. So, oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Been around there a few times. What's your favorite part of North County?
My favorite part of North County?
I'll tell you what my favorite part of North County is.
Man,
go ahead. Being from Hazelwood, here's what's really funny. Where I grew up, my favorite part of North County is actually closer to where he grew up. That's
really?
What's really funny.
Where's that?
I like going, we used to break into the quarry at the end of Hull's Ferry. Like, it dead ends into the quarry. And then you break in and we could break in. We would break in and go hang out, and it's got the water at the bottom, and we just sit there and chuck rocks and stuff like that. I love that.
Was that past James time?
Let's not forget also that since we are on the cusp of October coming up and Halloween.
Stop.
Yep. Bubblehead Row, baby. Carrico. You know what's up. That was always the spot you take. Carrico Road, you remember Bubblehead Road, right? What is going on here?
I've heard that story, yeah.
Oh my goodness! It's on the way.
Some people don't realize the name though of Carrico Road. They just know it as the Bubblehead.
Right.
Well, yeah, but we had to know the actual road to go to.
Like, I have to learn the story.
There wasn't no, but well, do you want to know the story?
I do want to know the story.
No, we're gonna save it. We'll save it for closer to Halloween. Aww. I want you to be excited. We're gonna be working on a Halloween show.
Yeah.
Bobby's supposed to be working on that. We're going to... well,
are we going to a haunted house?
We're going to go to a really haunted house where there's a lot of screaming ectoplasm and really dangerous stuff.
Mark wants us to die.
Mark does not. Mark just wants to put on an amazing Halloween show. And if we can get a Satanist to go with us, that's going to be even better just because I think it'd be scary as hell.
If I can borrow a couple pants.
We got to get a priest and a Satanist and like one of those mediums so that they can constantly walk around each room going, don't go in there. That's all I want. You know what I'm saying? And I want the Satanist is just going to argue with the priest the entire time. Well, God bless the spirits here. And, you know, like, it's not going to work, man. It's not going to work. Like, that's all I want is that guy screaming in the background. So I think that will be very entertaining.
That's awesome.
Well, Tyler, thank you so much for playing that.
Yeah.
Thanks for jumping on the show and being here with us.
Thanks for having me.
What's some of your musical influences, Tyler? Who do you kind of... style yourself
where
after.
Do I start? John Mayer, Dave Matthews Band. I like Bro Country. You know, Bro Country's cool.
Luke Bryan.
Yeah. Florida Georgia Line.
I've never heard of called Eric Bro
Church.
Country.
You know, Eric Church isn't Bro Country, but I like Eric Church.
Nah, I don't know. He kind of falls into that a little bit. I think he uses Bro Country as his way to get his songs mainstream.
Right.
And then he steps back on his album a little bit.
Like yeah, Luke Bryan album cuts.
Luke Bryan is totally Bro Country. Bro Country would be any country song that could be played at a frat house, and they wouldn't have an issue with it. Literally.
Oh, that makes
Bro
sense.
Country.
Yeah. Bro Country. Yeah.
You're not familiar with the
did
term?
You?
No, I wasn't.
Oh.
Did you?
I'm surprisingly, because
who's
I'm
your favorite
Kansas.
Bro Country artist?
My favorite Bro Country artist? Oh, man.
I love that we're calling it that. Like it's the actual genre.
It is the genre.
Bro Country.
Probably Florida Georgia Line.
Really?
Yeah, they had so much good stuff.
Just kind of had, came out of nowhere, though.
Yeah, but they're good, man.
Wow.
Did you Greek up while you were at Mizzou?
No, I was not in a frat or anything like that.
No.
Yeah.
Interesting. Why'd you choose not to?
I was just...
Just focus on school?
It wasn't even that. I lived at the Christian campus house. It was right next to like all the frat houses.
Are you a Christian?
Yes, sir.
Big time into the church?
Yeah.
What church you go to? Give them a plug.
We go to Windsor Crossing Community Church.
Okay. Is it by Hazelwood?
No, it's actually in St. Peter's. So there's the main campuses in Chesterfield, and it'll do like satellite
campuses. Yeah. I get it. Not everybody could be Pastor David in Faith Church St. Louis is what I'm trying to say, you know. Not everybody could take over in cahoots and just run with it. Not everybody.
He did take over in cahoots.
He did. That's his smaller of the two. That's the funny thing. That's his smaller of his two campuses. Like, his South County campus is massive. And he's
Sunset
building
Hills.
Up the one out in St. Peter's, like, equally as big.
No. He's got the Sunset Hills campus.
It's a college, or the high school. Like, he does it at the high school.
Yeah, right? He does it at the high school. Sunset Hills, he's got the Earth City, which used to be in cahoots, and then he does one at Francis Howell.
All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, it's about time for us to get out of here on the queue. I want to make sure that you guys...
drums, please!
Oh, there they are. Drums, please. I want to make sure that you guys know that you can check us out at 1380thex.com every single Sunday, 1 to 3, as well as 1420 WINI Saturdays, 9 to 11 a.m. I also want to thank Dan Isom for coming on the show today. Thank you so much to Dan Isom, as well as Tyler Crandall and his song... The North County Song. Check that out at youtube.com/Tyler Crandall. Lucy Mendez, Robert Hickman, I love you guys. Thank you so much for being here today.
We love you too, Mark.
Also, we're working on some Six Flags stuff, and we are going to be doing overtime. So if you are waiting for this, the Monday download is going to be amped with some overtime specialness.
Yeah.
Tyler, are you ready to like work through people's personal issues with me? Here in just a
Let's
second.
Let's go for it, man.
All right. Sounds like a plan, ladies and gentlemen. That's going to do it for us here on The Q. My name is Mark Bland on behalf of Lucy Mendez, as well as The Q producer, Bobby himself.
Thank you.
We appreciate all the times that you guys listen to us. Tell a friend, tell a family member. We will see you guys next time on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back.
Years.
Your boy's been a Christian.
I wish people could preach. See you.
Flame.
Flame, that's right.
Joyful noise.
Joyful noise. That's the song that we... Katy Perry got sued over because they said she stole Dark Horse from that.
Yep.
There it is.
I like
Flame
Joyful
from
Noise
St. Louis.
Better.
Joyful Noise. Yeah, it's more of that snap pop.
Yeah.
That boom.
I think it
boom,
sounds
boom,
a little better.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. It's got a better feel to it.
Give me Laffy Taffy. Come on, bring some Laffy Taffy up. I want to hear the Laffy Taffy. I haven't heard Laffy Taffy in front. Look at it. Lucy's already. Oh, no. Come on, man. Shut that other one down. Get that Laffy Taffy going.
Go.
Hey.
The Laffy Taffy.
The best part's at the beginning.
Girl, shake that Laffy Taffy. That Laffy Taffy. Shake that Laffy Taffy.
I wish we had video cameras in here.
That takes me back to high school.
I bet it does.
For Mr. Bubblegum, for Mr. Chico Stick, I want a dun-dun-dun. Oh, because you're so thick. Girl, come and jolly retro. Oh, because the thing's so good. For a long time. Oh, my God.
Ladies and gentlemen, producer Bobby.
I'll be here all night.
All night long. Well, we are joined on Overtime by Tyler Crandall, North County Song. Check it out at youtube.com/Tyler Crandall. Have you been offered any shows because of this thing?
No.
Nobody's offered you a show at all? I mean, not even Brewski's up in North County or any of these places? Cajino's ain't going to have you come in on... You sing Cajino's name! Like, dude, Bobby.
I'm on it.
Get on it. We are going to set up...
I'm Tyler's manager
now. Wait a second. I'm not a big fan of Cajino's.
What?
We got to find... No. I had an issue. I don't want to get into it on air. I'll explain to you guys why. But, like, never mind.
Let's sign him. Let's get him the X.
We got to figure out. We've got, like, the X records. I mean, I'm a president.
The X Factor.
I'm the president with Universal. I could get the distribution deal done. It's not a problem. The files are on the phone. Like, all we have to do is print them off and sign them. Like, it's done. Like, I could get it done. We could get you signed to Universal right now. So, no, I just don't think the song's going to. Like, I don't... There's people in New Jersey. They just are not going to... Yeah, it's very localized. Very localized. But I'm amazed that we haven't, like... I would think that in the fall or in the spring when they do the Valley of the Flowers up there. I think that you should play at the Valley of the Flowers, man.
Hey, who knows? We made a music video.
You did make a music video.
Yeah, and that's coming out in a couple days. So.
That's awesome, dude. You didn't call me or Bobby to be a part of the music video. What, you do not like us?
Well, funny
what is
story.
Up with that?
Yeah, what is up with that? Lucy Mendez is
pissed.
She's from
no.
Kansas.
Hold on.
Kansas.
That's so, Dodge City.
In Tyler's defense,
okay,
he didn't know us.
The day that the video was filmed,
right?
There was some other things that happened in St. Louis.
Oh yes, very very true.
So check this out. We put out an open call on Facebook,
right,
for people to come out while we're shooting this video.
Sure.
Okay. You know, just
how'd that work out for you on that day?
Well, you know, it was before I believe that happened. But we basically said, hey, show up to St. Ferdinand Park wearing some, repping your gear from high school, basically.
Right. Gotcha.
You know? And
people were all over the post, first off.
Oh, yeah.
I saw the post. People were all over it. They're like, oh, Tyler, I'm going to be out there. I'm going to bring my...
I'm going to be out there.
I got my Pattonville stuff. I got my Rittner stuff.
Exactly.
I got my East. And I was like, oh, man, this
Which
is going to
so
be awesome.
Which is so odd that this is the same day as my 20th high school reunion. And they can't get more North County than that. Right.
And I'm like, bring the homeschool kids. Like, let's all do this, you know?
The homeschool
kids. Yeah, homeschool kids.
He's really repping for everyone in North County.
in North County, right?
He's, like, really down for the homeschoolers.
You live in Florissant but go to CBDC. It's okay.
It's okay.
So we figured one of two scenarios was going to happen, right? Either 5 people show up or 500 people show up.
And what happened?
Nobody showed up.
Nobody showed up at all?
Nobody. Not that I know of. But we were there, and we made the best of it. So, but
that's all that matters.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
That's all.
Not going to lie.
Hey, you know what? You do what you got to do. And, of course, like you said, people are all over the post. At least they know your name. They know your song.
Yeah, it's been fun.
It's been fun. It's been a nice little ride for you.
Yeah.
That's absolutely. Cool, man. I appreciate it.
In like 4 days, this song blew up. I saw it on Saturday. Sunday, the day that you said it went to 2,000 views, I saw it on Sunday. I watched this slowly progress.
At least 1,000 of those views are because of Bobby.
I'm
watching it over and over.
Slowly progress because all of a sudden I started seeing it on more and more people on my pages, you know, newsfeed and everything.
Right.
Slowly it went from 2,000 to 29,000.
So, I mean, it blew up pretty fast.
Blew up major. That's absolutely a big deal. That's a big deal. To, you know, what's the average for your other videos? About 3,000?
Oh, no. Maybe 200 or 300.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Before this.
Do you write your own music?
I do. Yeah. I write some stuff that's not so, I guess, goofy. You know, North County song's kind of
goofy. You got something that's a little bit more tempered?
I got some stuff.
What do you got? What do you got for me that you can break out right now?
Oh, probably nothing right now.
Nothing right now?
No.
Oh man, I was excited there for a second.
He also went to
Mizzou.
Right. No, we get
makes
it.
Sense.
Is he gonna make the Mizzou's the Columbia song?
It's out there.
There's a Columbia song out there.
Yeah, seven things to do.
I love going to eat at this, and then it's some random place.
Like, no, it's different. It's quite different.
Oh, okay, so
it's a little more serious in nature.
Jayhawks are better.
I hate getting rape charges from girls that they say I roofie. That's not true because I didn't do it. I get it, man.
That's all right. Stuff.
You said it's more serious, right? Like, that's serious. That's really serious.
That's absolutely serious.
That's a very serious situation.
Yeah, that's not part of it.
That's not part of it at all. All right, fair enough. We're just joking. We're having a good time. All right, let's do some of this. I got a story first.
Sure.
And then I want to hit you guys with my letters from the listeners.
Okay.
Okay. Southwark Coroner's Court heard that Nigel Willis, 50, was too embarrassed to visit a doctor after, let me preface it with this. A man died from septic shock after a vibrator became stuck in his body and an inquest was heard. Southwark Coroner's Court heard that Nigel Willis, 50, was too embarrassed to visit a doctor after the sex aid became stuck deep within his rectum and he lay on a sofa for 5 days complaining of dizziness and discomfort. Yes. A friend finally...
Tyler's expression right now is the most awesome thing I've ever seen.
A friend finally convinced Willis to go to the hospital on the 30th of December 2013, and he was admitted to intensive care on New Year's Eve, where the doctors found that the sex toy had perforated his bowel, and he was suffering from septic shock. Willis died of multi-organ failure, sepsis, and perforated bowel on the 7th of February this past year, and the story just came out.
What a way to go.
That's pretty... Yeah. Like, first off, Bobby, what's it like to get one stuck
to have a deviated septum?
No, that's a broken nose, right? A deviated septum is a broken nose.
He's like, got a
do you shove vibrators up your nose?
I just wanted to see if you're smart enough.
Wow. So weird. Tyler, have you ever shoved a vibrator up your butt?
No.
All right.
Just one time while I was writing a song.
That's good. It's a good thing. Nobody here shoved a vibrator up their butt, right? Nobody here?
Nobody.
Lucy?
Plead the fifth.
Lucy?
Lucy!
Lucy!
I'm home!
Seems like they don't call it a vibrator. They call it the silver bullet.
Lucy's like, we don't talk about that in my country.
No.
What is the word for vibrator in Latino?
Well, I don't know what Latino
is.
Spanish?
Spanish? No, I've never used vibrator in Spanish.
My goodness, every time we put her on the spot on this show, she forgets the words. All right, let's go into these letters, okay?
Sure.
Letters from the listeners.
Now, Tyler, I got to get you in on this one, okay?
Okay.
These are basically, I used to go to Savage Love and places like that. I used to take stories, and I like to give my own personal spin on what the people should do. That eventually became really popular, and you can go to the contact page on theqnow.com. Contact us at the top of the page. And people started sending in their own personal stories. They got a little sick. They got a little twisted. Sometimes it's hate mail. Sometimes it's really funny stuff. I've got a few here, and we're going to break them down. And I got to hear your opinions on these, okay?
All right.
Should I tell my friend I don't like her new boyfriend? My friend has been dating a new guy, and the other night she wanted me to meet him for the first time. I didn't like him at all. He was cheesy, full of himself. He flirted with the waitress in front of us. He's nice to my friend, but I don't think he's right for her. She really wants to talk to me and get my opinion on him. Should I lie and tell my friend I like her boyfriend, or should I tell her the truth?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
We had a very similar one a few weeks ago where it was the whole coming up on a boyfriend type situation. Yeah. But what do you think?
In my opinion.
Yes.
It's always best.
Dr. Tyler.
Be honest.
Be honest.
Tell her.
What about you, Lucy? No?
Is this a guy friend or a girlfriend?
Should I tell my friend I don't like her new boyfriend? I think it's probably a girlfriend to a girlfriend.
Girl to girl.
Girl to girl.
It's girl to girl.
Mamacita.
Okay. If it's a recent, like, it's just
a one... She jumps into Spanglish very easily. Okay.
one or two dates, then yeah, tell them the truth. But if it's been several dates and she's asking you, hey, what do you think about me? You can't tell her that you don't like the boyfriend because then it's going to make it awkward.
And see, you're supposed to lie to her.
Here's the problem with that. You're still going to be friends, but she's going to know that you do not like this boyfriend every time that you're around that person.
Right. I understand, but it's like...
That's going to be awkward.
But, yeah, it's going to be awkward, but at the same point, like, I want to make sure that I maintain my friendship and my honesty within my friendship.
Here's how you say it. You can say, I like the guy, I just don't think he's good for you.
How would you say that in Spanish? In Spanglish?
In Spanglish?
Yeah.
I would just tell him, you know what? I really don't like the guy.
I really don't like the guy.
You do good for him.
You do good for him, mamacita.
You look good.
He's not good for you.
He's no good for you.
For you.
Okay. I read my girlfriend's journal and found out she's cheating on me. I've always been a slightly jealous person, Mark, but I've tried very hard not to be that way with my new girlfriend. She's been acting a little distant and weird lately, so I did something bad. I read her journal. My suspicions were right. She is acting weird, and it's because she's cheating on me. Should I confront her about it? Or if I do, will it look bad, Mark? Because I snooped through her personal property to find it out.
Hold on. I think Lucy just whispered something.
I think you've already kind of broken the trust barrier there.
She's a dumbass for writing it in the first place.
Oh, you would never have done that? Lucy's like, I never write it in my journal when I'm going to cheat on my boyfriend.
The whole time you're finishing the story, Lucy just looks at me and she goes, dumbass. And I'm thinking she's talking about the boyfriend.
Both of them.
Saying dumbass, like, you shouldn't have been stupid through her stuff. And then she comes to that.
No, it is. It's dumbass on both their parts.
Absolutely.
She should not be writing shit like that on her journal. And he doesn't need to be snooping around in her shit.
Dr. Krendel?
Look, that relationship is over. I mean, if you're the guy, I don't know if you confront her about it necessarily, but you got to be done, you know, don't
you?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Maybe, or she was probably trying to end the relationship and planted the evidence.
Or she was just testing.
That too. We are sneaky little bitches.
Whoa.
Why do you keep paying me off?
I didn't mean to cut you off. I found out something that was weird.
What?
Jeez.
Lucy got too excited. She almost melted the board.
You're not mic'd on the right spot. Like, talk.
La, la, la.
See, I can turn you on and off, but you go ahead and you talk, Crandall.
Check.
See? You guys got mics backwards, eh? Eh? That mic's supposed to be there, and that mic's supposed to be there, and I didn't know all this. Eh.
Thanks for discovering it at the end of the show.
We're going to fucking figure that out.
It doesn't matter now. Mark, I am a landlord. Recently, one of my customers' pipes were blocked as I went to unblock it. About a handful of used condoms collided with my face. I don't know if I should be disgusted by this or disgusted by my customer. Either way, I feel this is a major violation of our renter's agreement. I want to kick the person out. But then realize how many times I personally have done the said thing in the past and never been accused of anything for it.
Hold on.
Should I bring it up?
You shoved used condoms in pipes before?
No. We're guys. We do our thing with the used condoms. Sometimes we roll it up in toilet paper, throw it in the toilet paper, into the toilet bowl, flush it. You know, we've been guys. He's saying that, like, this situation got out of control, got wrapped up in a pipe. And unfortunately, because of that, he ended up having to come clean it, and the stuff smashed all over his face.
That is disgusting.
But then again, he's a guy. He's done this himself before. He's just never gotten caught up in the situation like this.
Do you guys not believe in wastebaskets?
What's a wastebasket?
What's that for? No, we need to get rid of the evidence. Evidence, go. Go. I don't want the other girl knowing about it. Like, it's, no, go.
Look, I was helping. Wow. I was recently about... 3 weeks ago, helping a friend move who got kicked out of their place.
Mm-hmm.
I go to move.
He always cracks himself up. I don't.
Pillsbury Doughboy laugh.
Stop it. I went to go move the dresser where the clothes were at.
Yes.
And there were like three or four used condoms.
Thrown on the floor behind it, yes.
On the floor behind it.
Yes, that is that. Those people need to be smacked in their face.
And I go, hey, man, I'm not moving the stuff in that room. And he's like, well, why not? And I'm like, go look at what nasty shit you left in there. And he walks in and he's like, oh, I was wondering where they went after I threw them. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
I stopped helping him. Gross. I left.
That's gross. That's bad. So what should this guy do? Should he tell the renter? You know, should he bring it up because of like, to prohibit further issues like this? I mean, let's be honest. It's already bad enough it's happened the way he did. He doesn't need to be coming over with the same issue again.
The exact words I would use as the landlord is, hey, make sure you're only throwing products that get flushed down the toilet in the toilet.
All right, fair enough.
Just leave it at that.
What about you, Dr. Tyler? Tyler's loving this section of the show because it's cracking him up, man. He's enjoying himself.
I don't know if I have any advice for this particular story. Yeah, I don't know.
All right, fair enough.
Lucy?
I like what you said, Bobby.
Well, you guys are going to really love this.
I concur with you.
We've got a Dan Walsh special. I will make sure that he knows about it since Dan's taking his hiatus right now.
Are we talking Laserdisc and rug burn?
Oh, it's down that road. Here we go.
Nice.
So the other night, me and my relatively new girlfriend were hot into some 16-9 action, and she decided to rip a fart in my face while eating her out. We've only been dating for a few weeks, as I said, and she says it's common for her. I am appalled and don't want to be in this situation anymore, but I love that position. Get out of here.
Stop. You said...
You so they're said at 69 positions.
You said it's commonplace. Listen. And Tyler looked at me with the face of death like, holy shit.
First off, Tyler, get up on that microphone, baby. Come on, get up on that microphone. Tyler, when was the last time girl ripped ass in your face on a 69 action move? I just need to know, when was the last time that happened?
Never.
That's never happened. Lucy, mic it. Get up here. When was the last time you cracked wind on a guy in a 69 position?
No, I'm no English.
You've never cracked wind, even like felt it?
No, never.
I got a question.
That is a no-no.
I've got a question. If a girl feels upset in her stomach, does that turn her off from sex? In most cases, does that, like, because I would think that, like, of course, sex is already kind of its own grotesque thing to an extent.
Oh,
you know,
there's nothing grotesque
there
about it.
No, stop.
I love sex. Everyone loves sex. We enjoy it. But like, you know, there's noises, there's things, there's wetness, there's all kinds of things that go along with it.
And that is part of the beauty.
Oh my God, Bobby. I can only imagine how wet you get.
Oh my God.
Has your wife ever ripped ass on your face while you were eating her out?
No, but...
And what if she did?
I don't know. I don't know what I would do.
I cannot say that my significant other or my wife or anybody else has ever done that to me. But this person has got an issue. He loves this position and he likes the girl, but she's saying this is common. Maybe this is the first time they've tried this.
Maybe she was just nervous.
Then he doesn't love it, A, and B... I mean,
yeah, but she's ripping ass wind into your face. Like,
yes.
It's
but if this is the first time he's trying it, then he doesn't love this position.
No, he just doesn't love raw sushi arse coming into his mouth. Okay? Like, just, he's not a big fan of that.
Look, man, ask her to go shit in a bag before you guys do it.
Jesus.
And you
Bobby,
feel good.
That's so wrong. Tyler, do you have anything for this lady? Tyler's just shaking his
head.
She
needs to take some gas X.
All right, fair enough. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for us to get out of here on overtime. I want to say thanks to Lucy Mendez for being here.
Well, thank you.
Tyler Crandall, youtube.com/Tyler Crandall. Check out the North County song. Let's get him to 50,000 views if we possibly can. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
I know we were having a very heated and topical discussion, but appreciate you being patient.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
No problem, man. And of course, producer Bobby, anything you want to say before we get out of there?
Stay blessed. Keep your mind straight. Don't be doing anything stupid, guys.
All right, that's going to do it for us here on The Q. We will see you guys next time on the show.
Ready to get dirty. This ain't a song for you if you asleep at 7:30. I rise like the